Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's Good Work Show.
Oh, I feel like I should apologize for my less than interesting backdrop.
Well, I think, didn't you use that one before? Like one time?
No, I don't think I've ever. So usually for the show, I relocate from my desk.
Yeah.
Because really, you're just looking at a wall. But I didn't today, so. But there's nice artwork on the wall.
Yeah.
You just can't see it.
No. Well, it's like,
there you go.
You just made that mistake on, like, when that PowerPoint, and they're like, well, I know you can't see this slide, but let me tell you. Right.
Exactly. Meanwhile, you got, do you have your diffuser on?
Yes, I do. I'm sorry. I'm not smoking anything or doing anything.
Or, I would never think that.
In my house. It is
right. That
let me show this just in case.
See,
I'm like, no, this is for real. It's a diffuser, diffusing essential oils. Yes.
Yeah, I need to get that because I am pretty sure I went to bed last night without putting out my candles.
Oh yeah, that's
they were out this morning, so I don't know if it just burned itself out. It's like really big and a glass thing, and it's not like it's gonna.
Well, but you never know. Now they say,
unfortunately,
first of all, I don't know when Fire Safety Month is, but I think it's within the fall. The time changes, like next week or something. Change your smoke detector batteries and do all this stuff. And it's starting to get cold, so space heater safety, all the safety stuff. Do the safety. Just get you a diffuser.
Yes, yeah, so a diffuser is probably much better.
It doesn't do anything. It just goes off.
I wish I could say that was the first time I've done that, but I have woken up before and been like, "Oh, it smells good in here," and then.
Yeah, we need you to get a diffuser.
I mean, the good thing is, like I said, I only buy, like, I have these really big candles and they're in like the big glass jars. So they burn down. They don't come up.
Yeah.
And they're not, you know, sitting on a platter or something like that. They're not just all willy nilly. But
yeah,
I kind of feel, you know, in medieval times, that's how you lit your house. So I figured.
Well, what was the life expectancy of people in medieval times? I just think that it was a little shorter.
I don't think it was fire, though. I think it was other unnatural causes. I don't think it was fire.
But
space heater season, I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Because here's the thing. I don't turn my heat on in my house in the wintertime.
Mm-hmm.
Like, ever. So I have my little space heater that I use to keep just the spaces where I'm sitting warm, and then I move it.
Didn't we talk about this we've talked about this before. Maybe not.
I'm sure we have.
But yes.
I'm sure we have. But yes, you know, making sure that those things are safe. We did, because I think we did talk about the kerosene heaters. Did we talk about kerosene heaters?
We talked about it in life. I just don't remember if it was on this show.
So you grew up it wasn't cold where you grew up, right?
No, not really. I mean, you know, so I grew up in like Monterey Bay area. Well, I guess it got chilly. Like it would go to, you know, like 50s, 60s, but I don't ever remember. There was no like scraping ice off your windshield.
No,
like I never
me either.
Any of that. Like that was never I didn't do any of that ever.
But you didn't have no old people in your life who had a kerosene heater?
Mm-mm. Mm.
Could heat. Dangerous.
I didn't know. So maybe we didn't have this conversation.
No, both of my grandmothers have, but see, they were in North Florida. So you would have like 3 days at the year that would get cold. But when we would come visit for the holidays, you know, they couldn't let their babies be cold. So rather than letting us be cold, we'd have an open flame kerosene heater inside the house. That's better.
You know what? I didn't have like none of my grandparents lived in the South. Like, well, I guess my grandfather did. He lived in New Orleans before he did, but that was like, that's New Orleans. Like that
doesn't, different.
Yeah, that's different than the South. So I didn't have that until I moved down here to experience that. So I feel like that's I don't even know if I knew what kerosene was.
I know somebody you could ask that could, that may, if they don't have one, they might could point
I know
you
who you're right, talking about.
They might could point you in the right direction. But yeah, it's one of those things. And second of all, it has a smell that
it's like probably not safe.
You smell the kerosene. It's probably not safe, but I think any person who ever had, you know, their grandma would have carried, like if you were to smell it, it was like that instant familiar, but it was very good heat. All that to say, I have one that plugs into the wall and it's electric and it's got the anti-tip, all the safety features.
All the safety features. But you still have to be careful with those, even if it has the safety. So all everybody get your warm weather stuff together. I already got my, because I've been wanting it for a few years, and I was gonna try to wait till I found it on like a really good sale, but I just went ahead and got it in just case they run out, is my weighted blanket. So got that ready on deck for when it gets real cold and I don't want to turn on my heat. I'm going to put on that weighted blanket. And I know it's for anxiety, but I feel like it should also, it's probably going to be warmer. That's going to work, but I feel like it's going to, I haven't used it yet, but I feel like that's going to be nice.
The other thing, you know, because we're just giving warm, cold weather living tips, apparently, is propane. So if you need propane, you should probably stock up. I just saw an article the other day, and there was a lot, there were in the, I guess it was in the AJC, and they were talking about how all the restaurants that are doing outdoor dining, it was fine, of course, during the summer. But as we get into winter, that there's like this run on propane for those outside heaters for all of the restaurants and stuff that are trying to maintain business during the winter months. So, you know, there's your helpful tip for
now,
today.
What's the difference between propane and kerosene? Because see, now this is where this is.
I really don't know.
Knowledge ends on that. I mean, I feel like gasoline, propane, kerosene, all the same.
But see, I feel like kerosene is it's liquid. I think like gasoline.
So propane is a gas stuff.
I think so. I think propane is in that tank and it's like a gas that you can light, but I feel like kerosene is like horrible. Like I think you fill something, it's liquid.
Yeah. Well, we need to have a scientist on deck because we have a lot of science-y type questions.
This is when I want to
answers to.
And well, this is when I feel like
Bill Nye on the side. Like, let's just call Bill Nye and ask him.
Well, see, my dad is, I mean, his he was a scientist. He went into education, but that's
Bill Lyons.
Exactly. We could literally have Bill Lyons rather than Bill Nye.
The science guy.
This is when, because I really did was like, I kind of want to call my dad and ask him, like, Daddy, what's the difference between kerosene and propane? And he'd be like,
versus gasoline. I mean, like gas, you smell it. So I feel like you should definitely not light gas on fire. I mean, I've seen.
No.
I mean, I've seen, you know, videos of people's stuff exploding. So I'm pretty sure like I wouldn't do that. But what is the difference between all of those flammable liquids? There's got to be some
kind. I don't know. I don't know why, like a pro, because I just feel like propane comes out like in a gas, you know, because there's gas. Right,
because they have the propane like grills.
Yeah. And it just, and then you can light the actual gas. But I feel like kerosene, from what I remember as a kid, it's a liquid and you have to actually fill the heater with the kerosene. Now, how that actually then translates into heat, that's beyond.
So what's the stuff in the tiki torches? Isn't that one of those?
That is, I don't know.
Somebody's going to watch this and be like, they don't know
nothing. They don't know anything. Nothing.
This was not on the SAT that I took. And if it was, I didn't get a good score on it. So
the good news is
this isn't necessary stuff.
We do, but then this actually isn't the topic of the show today. So that's the good news.
That is the good news. Yes. And we both have pink on in some form. It is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. So ladies and men, we have a great show coming for you. We've got the founder and executive director for I Will Survive, an organization that works in the space of breast cancer awareness, to come on the show and talk to us about the organization. But as a good reminder, it's October. So if you haven't done your screenings, if you haven't had your mammograms, like, this is a great time to make sure that you do that and do your at-home screenings as well. It's so important because, you know, that breast cancer is one of those ones. Early detection is key. It can mean the difference between life and death.
Yeah, it is. And this time, I feel like every episode we're always like, and then there's COVID, you know, there's, right. You know, there's that. So, you know, kind of thinking about a lot of things this year have been put on hold, like, you know, doctor's offices were closed and now they may not be open. And there were, you know, earlier this year, there were a lot of things that were not, if they were considered non-essential, right. And I'm going to assume that, you know, just regular screenings were considered non-essential initially, you know, you didn't have access to that. And hopefully right now things are opening back up and you'll be able to go in and get those screenings. There's a great commercial, and I think, I don't even know what it's for. It's one of the cancer centers, but they do talk about, you know, it doesn't wait.
Yes.
You know, that there's, you know, there's other stuff going on and we're trying to, everybody's trying to stay safe and stay healthy from one thing, but don't let, you know, staying safe and stay healthy from one thing interfere from you staying safe and staying healthy from something else. So it'll be great to chat about this today. And I do think it's interesting that we're going to talk about the guys, because I don't think they really think about stuff like that. So we'll have a little bit of conversation about that as well. And then maybe during the break, I can call my dad and ask him the difference between gasoline, kerosene, propane, and whatever is in a tiki torch.
Yes. And isn't there another one?
I feel like there's ethanol.
What's lighter fluid? See, that's another one. Like, that's something else.
It's butane.
Okay, so there is another one.
I don't know why I know this. I can say I pick up a lot. My dad, like I said, my dad is a scientist. So, you know, even when my nephews have questions about things, my sister's like, I don't know, call Papa.
Yeah.
And
he'll know.
He'll know. And we watch a lot of Star Trek too. So there's that.
Well, we're going to be back in just a second with Anissa Palmer, who is the executive director of I Will Survive. We're going to talk all about the organization, what she does, and hopefully give you some great advice as we are now in Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And we want to make sure that we all, you know what we have to do in terms of screenings, but then also learn how we can help others who are not only survivors, but maybe going through some challenges. So stay with us and we'll be right back. Well, welcome back, everyone. We are excited because we are with our guest, Anissa Palmer, who is the founder and executive director for I Will Survive, Inc. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So we love your dress, by the way. It's so cute. We see your pin there. And we were just talking about how it is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. October always is. It's great reminders. And this is a fantastic time to have you on the show. So why don't you start off by telling us about the organization? We love to talk to founders. And so talk to us too about how you came to found the organization and what it's all about.
Absolutely. Absolutely. 1985, when the official National Breast Cancer Awareness Month became about, it's actually the year I was born in the Virgin Islands. And unfortunately, my dear mother was diagnosed with stage 4 invasive breast cancer. And the doctors had given her 6 months to live. Now, at 5 years old, I did not know what any of that meant. But at that point, you know, when you started seeing more pink things coming about, and even in the Virgin Islands, I hated pink. And I was a tomboy, and I just wanted to be, you know, all this girly stuff and all this pink stuff, and I want to be away with it. But it was a tough time for our family. And so mom had five girls, and she, phenomenal human being, but losing her, unfortunately, her adopted parents both smoked. Mm-hmm. And so when her cancer had metastasized, it went to her lungs. She was exposed to smoke at a very early age. And so when the doctors gave her 6 months to live, unfortunately, when that tumor had metastasized and went to her lungs, it was a final lung collapse that took her life. Mm-hmm. Moving on some years, trying to deal with the death of my mother as a child, who was very difficult, living in the Virgin Islands, ended up moving to the mainland, the United States. And at 21 years old, I decided to join the military. It was my second tour in Iraq, and I saw a mirage of my dear mother. Mm-hmm. And at that moment, I knew mom was calling me to serve in another way. I separated from the military, honorable discharge, and started I Will Survive. And so in founding this organization, I realized there was a need in the community. You know, it's okay, I understand the calling, but what's the need of the community? And so did an assessment on research in more southern states. The diagnosis and recurrence rate was a lot higher in southern states. You know, so it was between Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia, where I knew I Will Survive needed to be. And so coming back to Atlanta, Georgia, started the organization, and I didn't know what our programs would look like, you know, and so being out in their community, some of our ladies just needed a drive to get to their appointment. Some of our ladies needed someone to talk to, be a listening ear. Some of our ladies simply needed groceries in the home. And so this was the foundation of how we started. And so 3 years later, we have more extensive programs. Our health education program focuses a lot on prevention as well. Our economic support program focuses on the necessities to survive, paying rent, utilities, travel costs to and from the healthcare facility, and also paying those breast cancer screening, you know, cost. With a lot of families, when we first started, had no health insurance. And so when we saw in 2014 the expansion of the Affordable Care Act, this is great. It's now covered in a majority of health insurances that we saw, but we still saw a lot of families that were uninsured and are underinsured rather. Mm-hmm. And so it was difficult, you know, how do we make sure even after cancer now? And so then we started our third program when it comes to health and wellness services, you know, and so it's been a journey. We actually celebrate 10 years in December, and it's been phenomenal to see a reduction in recurrence rates with one of our partners with Georgia Department of Public Health. And so I honor my mom every day in this work, and thank you for having me in October, National Breast Cancer Awareness Month.
Absolutely. That is an incredible story. And I would have to imagine that your mom is incredibly proud of the work that you're doing and just, you know, all of the ways that you're able to help. I mean, I just think about, you know, how young you were losing your mother and, you know, the how many other people that you've saved, not just the women that you're affecting, but the families and the circles that go out from that person. That's incredible. So let's dig in a little bit into your programs. And one of the things that I think is interesting, we talk about, and I do want to make sure that we talk about the screenings and all of that kind of stuff, but those supporting services are so important for people. I have a friend who's going through her own journey right now, and COVID has that layer has if you're immunocompromised, it's very difficult to go chase down Clorox. Like, you can't do stuff. So talk to us a little bit about those surrounding support services that you offer, because I feel like that might be a place where people might be able to tag in if they're thinking, okay, so I don't want to lose people early in the interview. So they're like, well, I got my screening and I'm good and that, whatever. So let's talk about some of those supporting and surrounding things that you're doing for women.
Absolutely. I'll start with even monthly doing our self-breast checks, you know, and so our self-breast exams, you know, it's many different advisors have shared, you know, to stop doing those. There was a lot of false positives. But we've still have so many women and men who have found their own tumors doing their monthly breast exams. And so whether you're doing it in the shower, whether you're doing it in the mirror, whether you're lying down and being able to feel any abnormalities, you know, in, you know, whether you see it, whether you feel it. And I think if we listen to our bodies a little bit more, we're able to identify what's wrong with it early on, and we can go to our doctor and get our, you know, clinical exams, you know, annually, make sure that we are doing our screenings. I know the age has changed from 40 to 45. But again, it's based on history, you know, and so my mother was adopted. And so we have so many people that we work with who know nothing about their history, you know, whether they've never had health insurance, you know, or depending on the type of employment they have, you know, and so having those tough conversations, you know, what does your family history look like, you know, and for some who even, you know, of course, even the data shows us, just because there is no family history does not mean we'll never get breast cancer. And so that number is 1 in 8 for women in her lifetime, and 1 in about 1,000. It's actually close to 800 now for men. And we share, we've only had 3 men who we've helped in this almost 10-year span, you know, and so there's still that negative stigma of it's pink, it's breast, it's a woman's issue. I have nothing to do with that. And so we're also trying to dispel those myths as well. You know, various times pre-COVID, before going out, you know, before not being able to go out in the community, we ran into so many men in our communities. Like, I don't have to worry about that, and walk right past our booth, you know, at health fairs, various events when we're up speaking. And it's, you know, men, listen too, you know, not just for your wives, for your mothers, for your sisters, the important people that you love in your life, but listen for yourself as well. And so make sure that we're also, with COVID now, getting the proper PPE out there in the community. The hardest thing is not being able to go into the hospital still and visit the people that we love and support. That part has been very difficult, but also knowing that we don't want to help increase the risk and the spread of coronavirus as well. So it's important.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, yeah, so I think this is great information. I had not heard that people should not do the self-screenings at home. I thought that was still a thing. So that's interesting that we shed light on that and, you know, remind people too that, you know, still do what you need to do and listen to your own body. I think there's so much to that, not only for just breast cancer and cancer in general, but just what other ailments are going on and how you might feel great 1 minute and not so great the other, and just taking time to just do an assessment on yourself to see how you feel. So that's awesome. Talk to us about ways people can get and support the work that you're doing. Do you have volunteers? Like Trini said, you know, she's got a really great friend who, you know, can't go out and get gloves and wipes and things. Are there ways that volunteers might be able to work with you to help get some of those things for the folks that you're serving? What can people do, particularly right now, while we're still in this pandemic, and help out with the folks that you're serving?
Absolutely. Great questions. And yes, we love our volunteers, and we have an international volunteer program. And so we've taken interns as well from Paris and various countries all over the world, which has been a real blessing to be able to serve with our future leaders in the health world, and various virtual volunteer work right now, especially during COVID, and always room for, you know, more hands-on opportunity to get involved. And right now we're actually a part of a Hands on Atlanta week. And so we've been asking volunteers connected with Hands on Atlanta to, you know, write cards, encouraging cards to newly diagnosed men and women, you know, and their families. You know, think about the children too, because we believe in the full family, you know, supporting when it comes to health. You know, when we were doing our health workshops, virtual now, but when we were in our facility doing our health workshops, you know, inviting the families to come out, you know, so that it's educational for the entire family. So that healing helps everyone, if we can heal at the same time. You know, if there's ways where, you know, a lot of our families are single mothers with average 2 to 3 dependents. And if, you know, that child now becomes that caregiver, you know, at 5 years old, 7 years old, 15 years old, how are they balancing school and being a caregiver and still trying to be a child, you know? And it's difficult. And a lot of the families that we support are low-income families, some living in extreme poverty according to national poverty line, and it's difficult to go into some of the schools. Unfortunately, we know what goes on in some of our schools, and when we look at guidance counselors or lack thereof, you know, what kind of support, not just the mothers in these single head of households, majority of that we serve, but also for the children, you know, and if the fathers are there, you know, and how can we connect if there's opportunity to, you know, have those tough conversations so that it's not just healing the cancer, but what happens after cancer? You know, how can we ensure that they are empowered to take more control of their health, whether it's asking questions with their doctors, you know, make sure they're staying on top of it, you know, but also that self-care piece, you know, what does my family dynamic look like? When it was in employment, is there opportunity for more growth and development to be able to have more income in the household so that we can provide and decrease that generational poverty cycle?
That's amazing. So before we go, tell us your website, where people can go find out more information, connect with your services, make donations, whatever. So share that information with us.
Absolutely. During this month, it's our busiest month, as you know, with National Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so we have a lot of virtual events. We have a few outdoor social distance safe events as well. And so they're all up on our website, iwillsurviveinc.org. And we're all over social media. And so you can stay connected with us as well. Instagram, I guess, is number one now. And so that hashtag or handle rather is at I Will Survive Inc. or on Facebook, Twitter. But yeah, please stay connected. Please get involved. We need your support. This time, I know COVID is tough for everyone. So lots of decrease in donations we've seen since March. And then even grant funding cut off, you know, for March. And now finally getting that start back again so that we can continue to do the critical work that we're doing. So thank you all for wanting to help. Please stay connected with us.
Awesome. Well, we will definitely encourage all of our listeners, all of our viewers to go onto the website, see how you might be able to help. As you mentioned, the statistics of, you know, 1 in 8 women and now like 1 in 800 men, that means we all know someone yes. who is, or someones, probably if it, particularly for women, who are affected. And if you don't know anybody who directly has it, there's a family member or friend. And so we all can do our part by at least spreading the word, making sure our friends and family are doing, you know, all of the screenings that they need to, and get them educated about what's going on. This is a great time during COVID, while we have some downtime, maybe you're at home, to read up on some things that you may not have known and what's the latest. So thank you, Anissa, for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. I Will Survive. Check them out online, on social media, and everybody stay safe out there. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you so much for having me, ladies.